accession number 20519, Reel 2.
Trevor John, Reel 2.
By the time I got to the mountain stream, I was so tired that your attempt to jump across inevitably failed, and I vividly remember ending up in the water, which was so cold that it just took my breath away, and I struggled and crawled up onto the bank on the other side. That was absolutely horrible. but there you are. I think the place was called Cwm Gwdy, of all things, but there you are. I do remember, while I was at the camp, playing football for one game for the Welsh Brigade, and we had a lad who eventually became a Welsh international playing in the same team. He was doing his national service the same time as us, and that was Len Oldchurch, who played for Swansea and later Sheffield United. When we left Brecon, he stayed behind. He was on the physical education staff there then. But you could get decent posting, I think, if you had a particular talent. Just as when we left Cardiff, a boxer by the name of Best, who was from Cardiff, stayed at Cardiff Mainly Barracks. You know, there.
What do you remember happening next?
I remember that Brecon, I mean, I was about 25 miles from home, so I did manage to get home for a couple of weekends, usually hitchhiking one morning, and I remember being on a milk lorry which went round more farms in Brecon than I thought there were, and it took me ages to get home, hours and hours, but nevertheless our time at Brecon came to an end, we were posted to, we were going to Hong Kong, the Welsh Battalion, we were in the Welsh Regiment of course at the time, the Welsh Battalion were in Korea. We were going out as reserves, but we were going to Hong Kong for further training. We sailed on the Empire Pride from Liverpool. Now that must have been around about end of April 1952, because on May the 18th 1952 I had my 21st birthday. And I was on the troop ship in the middle of the Indian Ocean. My mother had requested a record be played by the BBC. And it was played. It was Winfred Hatwell playing, who was a pianist, an American pianist, who playing the Black and White Rag. I never know why my mother selected that, because I wasn't really quite keen on Winfred Hatwell, but nevertheless, that was played, but I didn't hear that. Didn't have a radio. Didn't even know it was going to be played. My elder brother, who was in the Merchant Navy at the time and on board ship, was the only member of the family that did pick it up, and later on he told me that he heard that. So there you are. We went on to Hong Kong. When we disembarked, we were sent to the New Territories up near the Chinese border, near a town, little town called Fanling, which has probably changed beyond recognition now, I would think.
What kind of duties did you have there?
We were training, I think, by and large, but I don't really, we must have been doing that, because I think we were into just training, and it must have been pretty routine, because I don't remember too much about it. I remember sitting in the monsoon ditches when it rained, with the water cascading down the side of the hill, and we would sit on one of the steps in the monsoon ditch for the water to pour down over us. And I remember one evening going into Fanling, where there was a sort of a naffy with a couple of my army mates. I wasn't a heavy drinker. We had enough money to buy 2 pints of beer between us. And we decided that we would buy 1 pint of beer and spend the rest on a bingo ticket in the naffy. Believe it or not, we actually won at bingo and had enough money to have a night out. So that was okay. But the only other thing I remember about Hong Kong was the number of people in the regiment who contracted the tinea, which is a sort of skin complaint, very common out there.
Did you have any contact with Chinese population?
No, very, very little. We saw them and that was about it. I never even went into Hong Kong itself. We were up in the New Territories training, and the next thing I knew was we'd completed our training and we were going to go off to Korea.
Were you already in a battalion by then?
We were in the Welsh Regiment in Hong Kong, but the Welsh Regiment were due to come out of Korea and they were coming back to Hong Kong, as I understood it. On the draft out to Hong Kong, there were 100 of us, Welsh Regiment. And I remember that 96 of them were National Service and 4 were regular soldiers. Well, where I got that figure from, I don't know, but that's been in my mind all these years. It may well be because they transferred the 96 National Servicemen into the King's Liverpool Regiment. Never even heard of them before, but that's what happened. And the 4 regulars stayed behind in Hong Kong to stay with the Welsh Regiment. We joined the King's. As far as I can remember, we must have joined them on board the ship in Hong Kong Harbour, taking us to Korea. And I never remember. It might have been the Orwell, but I can't remember really which one it was.
So it was the conscripts who served in Korea instead of, and not the regulars?
The 4 regulars stayed behind in Hong Kong, yeah. Which is it makes sense in one way, in that they had joined that particular regiment as a regular soldier. Didn't make much sense that you join the army to be involved in conflict, I suppose. You must know that it's coming. We didn't want to go and we were there. I can remember getting off the boat at Pusan. Now, that would have been in probably, I'm not sure of the date. I didn't keep a diary at the time. So it was probably the beginning of September, end of August, beginning of September. 1952. And we were put on a train, I think. I can't honestly remember too much about it. I can remember getting off at the dock, but we must have gone on a train inland. And the next thing I remember then was being in reserve behind the front line. That's where we went, first of all, from Pusan. The two things that stick vividly in my memory about being in reserve. One was that I had a temperature, and I remember being wrapped up in blankets and put quite close to a log fire where I spent hours sweating and felt quite good the following day. So that treatment seemed to work for a temperature anyway.
What do you think you had?
I don't know. It felt as if I'd had the touch of pneumonia or something like that, you know. I mean, I really did have a temperature, and I was really hot. And but that's what they did. And whether I had any medication as well, I just can't remember. But I remember being wrapped up in blankets so that I couldn't move my arms even, and put close to a fire. The other thing I remember, and this says something about our training, I think, was that it was discovered that we were troops getting ready to go into action. We were already in reserve, and not one of us who had been transferred from the Welsh Regiment to the King's Liverpool had ever thrown a hand grenade. So that was a flaw in our training, all right. We went and had sort of an hour's session on how to throw hand grenades, because I vividly remember being told that if a hand grenade lands near you, once you pull the pin out, you count up to 10. And by the time you get to 9, you should be flat out on the floor because it's going to go off. And one of the boys threw this hand grenade and it went straight up in the air and came back down again. And I remember us scattering a bit quick. I understand what, if I remember rightly, one of the lads had a small fragment in his back, but there was nothing serious out of that. But certainly I remember quite vividly the hand grenade practice. You know, after that, the next step was, of course, going into the front line. And we were taken over from the 3rd Battalion, the Royal Australian Regiment. I might be getting mixed up with the 1st Battalion, the Royal Australian Regiment, but I'm pretty convinced it was the 3rd Battalion, the Royal Australian Regiment, looking back. I was on the advance party that went into the line, so I spent a little time, day or so, I think, probably, with the Australians. They tended to be a lot older than us. A lot of them were veterans from the last World War. They came across as people who knew this stuff. And I had stories from them of one Australian soldier saying to me, well, we go out in patrol, and when we go out on patrol, if we go out in large numbers, you just give your positions away. We like going out in pairs, twos. So that if you come across, if you're the Chinese patrols, you can just lie down in the paddy fields by the side of the footpath and just let them go by, you know. I thought they were ever so brave at the time. Whether it was true or not, I don't know, but it probably was, because they certainly came across as being hardened veterans, you know. And I quite liked them. They were okay. But then, of course, they left, and we were left as the King's Liverpool Regiment in their positions, feeling, I think, pretty inexperienced and, you know, wondering quite a lot what was about to happen, because none of us had ever had any experience of war before. So, you know, it certainly left a lot for gave you a lot of food for thought.
Were you in a platoon and company?
Yeah, I was. No, it might be something to do with my age, this, but I think I was in B Company, but I couldn't swear to it, you know. But I was pretty sure I was in B Company, and when we went into the front line, we had two forward companies. There were lots of hills in Korea, and we had two forward companies and two rear companies. And our company was as you're looking towards the front line, it was the rear company on the left. There was a valley to our left between the King's Liverpool positions and the positions of whatever regiment took the high ground to our left. And I don't know what regiment was there at the time. And for us to move from the rear position down to our forward positions, we needed to go down this valley. So we were a little bit away from the front line, a matter of a couple of hundred yards, I suppose, you know. Now, how long I was in the front line, I can't really remember. But it was a matter of weeks rather than months. I went on a fighting patrol out into no man's land, which led to nothing. We never saw anybody and we came back safely. I vividly remember going on what they call a listening patrol, where three of you go out in front of your own positions, set up at a particular spot, and you're there to try and contact any enemy patrols that come towards your positions. And we used to do two on duty and one off then. The one could try and have a rest during the night while the other two were watching. The thing that I remember about the listening patrol was that we had an earth tremor while it was my turn to have a rest. So I was lying flat out on the floor when I made an earth tremor. And never having experienced an earth tremor before, I found it quite frightening. And of course I was wondering what on earth was happening. But it was just a tremor, that was okay. They even have those in North Wales and Stoke-on-Trent as well anyway, from time to time, so. Yeah, that was okay. Then I remember the dugouts and being told that sometimes when there were rats around, and there were big rats out in Korea, sometimes soldiers would sit at one end of the dugout in the dark, and when they heard a scurrying at the other end, would fire a shot at to see if they could kill the rat. But whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I was certainly told that. I can remember coming out of the dugouts onto the hill whilst the American planes were flying over, because the Chinese used to get their heads down when the planes came over. I can remember the planes bombing the Chinese positions on one occasion, and basically watching it just as if it was, you know, a show. That was the only time we would come out on top of the hill, was in daylight, because it was too dangerous at other times. And then we had the experience of going on a company attack on a Chinese position. The object of the exercise, as I understand it at the time, was to try and take prisoners. And they thought this forward position that the Chinese had would be the ideal spot, I suppose. The company went after dark across no man's land. And our platoon was the platoon that was at front until we got to the bottom of the Chinese positions, the base of the hill. We took up positions to cover our colleagues, who then came through us and went up into the Chinese positions. But when they got there, the people in the forward positions of the Chinese had withdrawn. They'd obviously realised that something was happening. So they pulled back from their forward positions. Our platoons then came back down the hill through us, and we were the last ones out. The Chinese mortared their own positions and then mortared all the way back across no man's land, moving the mortars nearer and nearer to our positions. They didn't quite get the timing right because we managed to stay just in front of the mortaring. And I was told that the only casualties we had from that company attack were a couple of stretcher bearers who had a bit of shrapnel in their backs. But that's what I was told at the time. But it was quite frightening, even though we never came under direct fire from the Chinese. But at least we went into their positions, you know. So actually, in a few weeks, there's quite a lot went on. Then came the 19th of October, 1952, which I consider to be my second birthday, really. Mm. We were about to go out on a fighting patrol, and I think I said earlier that our company was one of the rear two companies, in the regiment, and that to go down to our front forward positions, we needed to go down a valley, which was a couple of hundred yards long, just to the left of our hill position. The problem with the valley was that it was in full view of the Chinese opposite, well, when it was daylight, of course. And there we were behind the hill waiting for it to get dark so that we could go out and patrol. Now, and it seemed that the battalion had, or the regiment had received an instruction that the Chinese patrols were getting out into no man's land before the United Nations patrols, and we needed to do something about it. In other words, we needed to be out there first. And that instruction was certainly relayed down the line to our patrol. We had a sergeant in charge of the patrol, and he was backed up with a full corporal who had originally been in the Welsh Regiment and had risen through the ranks. We were behind the hill when the sergeant said, "Right, let's go." But unfortunately, the light was still pretty good, so I thought. And I said, "Don't you think it's too light? If we go down the valley at this time, we'll be in full view of the enemy and we are likely to be mortared." The sergeant more or less said words to the effect that he gave the orders and we needed to follow them, and that if we didn't follow the instructions, we could end up on a court-martial. He was backed up by the corporal, which is a bit disappointing, really. And one of the other soldiers said that he felt it was too light. Anyway, with the threat of a court-martial, we decided, obviously, that we would follow instructions and orders, and that's what we've been trained to do anyway. And off we set. We were going down the valley, and I must admit, we were roughly halfway down the valley and nothing had happened, and I was beginning to think that I'd got it wrong when we heard the popping sound of a mortar, which is what you hear first of all when it's fired, and then you hear the whine as it comes down afterwards. A mortar bomb landed, I suppose, around about 50 yards in front of us. And then a second landed behind us. And it was then that I realized that we were walking down this footpath in the valley, which actually was in the middle of a minefield. So we had the choice of going forward or back. But what we did was just take cover. There was a little stream bed alongside the footpath, and the stream bent a little bit, and on the far side of the stream the bank came up a little. So I remember the patrol trying to take cover as close to the bank as we could, but the mortar bombs closed in on us and eventually hit the patrol. And as I was hit, and so were others, and there was one killed and five wounded out of the 13. And the one killed was a lad from the same village as myself. His name was Gwyn Goodfield. I didn't really know much about it then, because I had 18 pieces of shrapnel in me, so I was told later. And some of the pieces were in my head, and one lodged in the orbit above my left eye. And I couldn't see a thing with blood running over my head, and I was blind virtually. And I remember an order being given to retreat back to our positions, and I remember starting out back up the footpath. I must have walked past my dead colleague without noticing him, and then I collapsed. I can't remember anything else then, until being strapped onto the outside of a helicopter. If you've ever seen the program MASH, it was just like that, really. Of course, I don't remember taking off, because they put you to sleep, so you'd probably die of fright otherwise. And then I remember waking up in the MASH tent. How long afterwards, I don't know. I'm not sure how long we stayed at the MASH, but then I remember being taken to an airport where we were flown by the Royal Australian Air Force to Japan.
Did you get any treatment in the MASH?
Yes, I did our treatment, but I was in a pretty bad way. Well, it must have been, I think. I'd lost an awful lot of blood, I'm sure. And had these 18 shrapnel wounds. Fortunately, though, before we went out on patrol that day, we were, for the first time, given bulletproof vests. And I was wearing a bulletproof vest, so I had the 18 pieces of shrapnel in my legs, arms and head, and nothing in my torso. So I just think I'm probably very fortunate, you know, there. We were flown to Japan. I mean, I'm not sure how many were on the plane. And I I don't recall any of the other of our platoon or our patrol coming with.